Third and final hour here on this Thursday. We thank you so much for being with us. That is Jason Ross. I am Damian Barlin. Collectively, we are known as the Lowdown. We haven't been together very much lately.
No.
But those times of separation, I believe, are they're behind us now.
For the most part, yes.
And you and I are together. Yeah. Where we should
be. Reunited. And it feels so good.
Indeed it does.
Yeah.
It actually feels spectacular. Are you peaches or Herb?
Oh, definitely. I don't know.
Dierks Bentley.
Yes.
Which one are you, Dierks or Bentley?
Oh, Bentley.
Bentley, yeah, for sure. You're definitely a Bentley kind of guy. He's going to be here at the Toyota Amphitheater on Saturday. This is a big ticket. These country concerts, man, we just raved about all the hip-hop shows at the Golden 1 Center. These country concerts, you mentioned Tim and Faith. They were at the Golden 1 Center not too long ago. We had Sam Hunt was here, I think, just last week. Now we got Dierks Bentley. We got these tickets for you right now. You want to get your hands on these, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140, and we will get you set up. You could be a part of this show this weekend. If you miss any part of the show, missed any part of the first couple of hours, check out the Lowdown Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, your favorite podcast platform. You can head over to KHDK.com immediately following the show. You can get it there as well. We kind of have touched on at various points, Jason, throughout today's show, the case of Ezekiel Elliott and what's going on with this 6-game suspension. You know, you heard from DeMora Smith earlier talking about a potential work stoppage coming following the 2020 season. You can kind of speculate that guaranteed contracts will be the lead issue for the NFL players when that comes around. I do have to imagine this. I don't know what term I'm looking for. Punishment process. That's probably not the right term, but that's what it is, right? I think this punishment process is going to be evaluated. We knew last Friday when this suspension came in, it was 6 days, and given the nature of the incident, we knew that the time that the suspension was put out, which was August 11th, to the date the appeal is going to be heard, which I believe, Jason, is August 29th, we knew things were going to get uncomfortable. And we were going to start to hear things about the alleged victim of this case. And we have. We've heard that there are that she threatened to ruin his career on a number of occasions. We've heard that she threatened to blackmail him with the sex tape. And we were starting to hear these things. And the NFL was very displeased with that because they believe that the Players Association has leaked that information to a number of media outlets. And they're putting out press releases. The NFL and then the NFLPA, they're putting out like dueling press releases, just kind of rebutting each other in what one is saying. And This is what I was referring to when Doug and I were talking about last Friday. Things are going to get uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And the NFL is accusing, which, again, this is it's just such a thin line because of the kind of case it is, but they're essentially accusing the NFLPA through this whole process of attempting to shame the victim.
Right. Know,
victim shaming. And
that's dangerous.
It's dangerous to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous to accuse. This whole situation for the next 12 days is going to be really bad.
Yeah.
For Zeke, the PA, and for the NFL.
And I think we said this before the show, both things in this case can be true.
Yeah.
I'm going to ruin you. I'm going to be your worst nightmare. This is not going to end well for you. And they could still try to shame her. I don't know where that's going to go. He could also still be guilty of what he's being accused of.
And that, you know, that brings up another question. Because we, you know, spent a little bit of time dissecting, you know, the 6 games. And
seemed harsh kind of at the time.
Given what we know, given the information that's available to us.
Right.
And the information that we have is the same information that you have. It feels like something is missing. Mm-hmm. Especially given, you know, trying to take this whole thing in totality now, you know, 6 days removed from the suspension coming out. Taking into account what Jerry Jones had to say before we got any sort of report and before any sort of suspension was coming out, when he says, I don't see a single thing in there that makes me believe Ezekiel Elliott committed any form of domestic violence whatsoever. If he read the report that we did, I'm very curious to know what the hell Jerry Jones considers domestic violence.
Yeah. Who is very interestingly quiet right now, too.
It would, and that's a story in and of itself, mm-hmm. right? So you take that into account. You take the alleged blackmail and the threatening to ruin your career text message. You start to take all of these things into account. It feels like we're missing a chunk of something. And the initial thought was, yeah, six feels harsh given what we know. Because no player has ever been suspended for six games. They're supposed to.
Yeah, that's like the blanket.
That's the line, right? I mean, PED use for your first offense
that's
is
four. Right?
Is four.
Yeah.
There's no conversation. It's four. That's what I thought this new domestic violence policy was going to be, is you commit domestic. It's six. There's no conversation. It's six. But that hasn't been the case.
Mm-hmm.
Josh Brown, the Giants kicker, was suspended one game. And then... The report came out of how truly bad his situation was and how truly bad he is, and the Giants saved face by cutting him.
Mm-hmm.
I've had time to think a little bit more about this, and if reading it as five separate domestic violence incidents in 6 days, six games isn't enough.
Right.
It's not even close to enough. I don't know. It's like they're treating a work week as one domestic violence incident. Now, again.
Or just clumping it to, hey, we have said as a league we're going to make it six games. So it fits in the six game box. Does this?
No. It five times in 6 days. Again, we're just working with the information we have.
Which so we didn't have that before.
A lot of this could be discredited later. It could be proven to be true later. This just brings up so many questions. But let's stick with this one just for another second. Six games isn't enough. The follow-up question to that would be, five times in 6 days, the NFL is they're happy with what they found, and that this is strong enough to warrant a very firm suspension. We'll make a stance, and we're going to get this right. We've essentially screwed up every single incident of domestic violence since the Ray Rice situation, beginning with the Ray Rice situation, and our answer to that was just to throw Ray Rice out of the league. We tried to make a stand with Greg Hardy. It didn't necessarily work the way we wanted it to. We tried to go for 10. It got appealed down to 4. So we're going with this. So we blew the Josh Brown situation. We completely messed that up. So we're going to hit this Ezekiel Elliott thing, and we're going to get it right. But if all of this information is accurate, why wasn't he charged with a crime?
Mm-hmm.
Doug and I posed this question on Friday. You know, this was in Columbus, home of the Buckeyes. That stuff can't be ignored. We've talked about this on a number of occasions when it comes to places like Columbus and Knoxville mm-hmm. and Tuscaloosa and Tallahassee and all of these different places. The colleges run that town. And did the NFL have more information than the police did? I just feel like there's so many unanswered questions to this. And the NFL and the NFLPA are busy throwing, dirt back at each other.
Unbelievable amount.
Yeah, instead of just saying, look, this is what we have and this is what we're going to present. Because I don't know what the harm would be in the Players Association saying, well, here's what we have. They vaguely mentioned last Friday, hey, the NFL purposely left out a lot of information from their report, a lot of information that could potentially exonerate Ezekiel Elliott. They left all that stuff out. We're going to make that stuff public so you know what happened. Okay, we'll make it public. Stop, tell us.
Do it.
What is going on?
That chunk we're talking about that's missing seems to be pretty valuable.
Because all you guys are doing right now is just fighting back and forth, and I think more than you're not shedding any light on anything, you just look childish.
Mm-hmm.
What is going on here? This case was investigated for 13 months. No charges were filed, but the report that comes out is pretty damn inflammatory. And I think this is worth repeating. My fandom of the Cowboys doesn't outweigh my humanity.
Right.
Five times in 6 days, if that's even remotely accurate, throw his ass out of the league for a year. And if he can't get it right because... you could take into account the Mardi Gras situation. You could take into account the bar. What you might want to take into account is Urban Meyer.
Yeah, who's now saying stuff about him.
And
or all, his circle of friends and things like that.
Those people at Ohio State who, you know, Joey Bosa, who's like, I couldn't room with the dude anymore. Like, he was a little too much for me. We had Drew Davidson on a couple weeks ago when the bar incident happened. Say, hey, you know, has anyone ever considered, like, maybe Jason Witten going to talk to him, pulling him aside, say, hey, man, you need to do it this way. You need to, you gotta, you know, straighten out the path a little bit. And I remember, like, my heart sank when Drew Davidson said, oh, he did.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, and it still didn't
gotta
work.
Gotta be willing to listen.
Like, now, okay, now what?
Right.
Okay, you're not getting through to this guy. There's obviously, whether there's whatever the severity, if it happened at all, this domestic violence incident, Zeke needs to, he's headed down the wrong way.
Right. No matter what they try to discredit from her, there's something there. And those other things that have been kind of just pushed aside, the thing in the bar, the thing in Mardi Gras, those aren't, he's not nothing, that's just more a reflection of him a little bit as opposed to him getting in trouble for any of that. But you know that stuff is there and that he's capable of it. And it's got to be alarming to the Cowboys, his teammates, coaching staff, all those guys. And what Urban Meyer's now saying, just a lot of people are coming out and saying things kind of post all this news coming out.
This is a great text here because I know we had kind of tried to bring this up before. I'll try to follow this the best I can. It's a number of texts here at 44-1140. If you want to jump in, you certainly can on the phones as well. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. It could simply be the district attorney declining not to pursue charges based on their belief of getting a conviction. That's how bringing up charges works. If you don't believe you have enough evidence to get a conviction, then you don't spend the money and try to prosecute. It doesn't mean the crime didn't happen. That's why OJ paid out the civil trial. The burden of proof is different. Thank you for that text because it brings up a great reminder. The burden of proof is different. Like in terms of like criminal law and civil court, the burden of proof is different. In order for a district attorney to get charges pulled, get charges brought up, they got to believe they can get a conviction. In the NFL, you just need proof. We're pretty confident we can suspend you for this.
Yeah.
If nothing else, you're being an idiot, and we're going to suspend you for being an idiot because we're going to hope that's going to stop you from being an idiot moving forward.
Exactly.
I can't think of one professional athlete that's worked for so far.
But that's the thought.
That's
the
thought
that's
process, right?
Want.
So,
yeah.
And I'm glad he brought up the OJ trial because it made me think of, you know, the analogy I gave you during our pre-show meeting. What the NFLPA is doing in terms of, I don't want to use the word victim shaming because I don't want to accuse them of that, but putting things out to discredit the victim, like the potential blackmail and extortion and all of that, it's similar to what Johnny Cochran did. And if you could take yourself back to that case in, you know, 1994 or 95 or whatever it was, and I'm almost positive it was Fred Goldman who said at some point during the trial, and I'm certain it was on one of the documentaries, this trial is no longer about the murder of my son and Nicole. It's no longer about who killed these two people. It's about racist cops planting evidence and the incompetence of the LAPD.
Yep.
And Johnny Cochran created that narrative.
Changed it.
And that was the narrative that got into the public view. Obviously, that was the narrative that got into the jurors' view.
We heard them say that now. Yeah.
We know that now. And that's what the NFL Players Association is doing, is putting a view out there of this potential woman, almost saying is, look at the pitfalls of being a professional athlete. These are the types of things that happen. What that doesn't explain, though, is why this woman has bruises all over.
Mm-hmm.
But there are questions about that too, because the report that was actually made public even states, well, she has some pre-existing bruises. It's like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Why is this woman so bruised up?
Right.
And now I think the narrative that they're trying to create by putting the extortion claims and the blackmail claims and the sex tape and the text messages and all of that stuff public is, from the bruises to the messages to the tape, is that the woman set Ezekiel Elliott up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just me taking all the information and forming my own conclusion about what I think the NFLPA is doing. To me, that's what it feels like they're doing. If it's accurate, I have no idea, but you're going to have to work pretty damn hard to prove that that is accurate when you have physical evidence to say some sort of abuse happened.
Where Jerry's silence is fascinating to me.
Absolutely.
Because he's never silent. He's a huge part of the NFL, highest profile owner. It's a high profile player. You know, you I don't want to speculate. That's unfair. But I wonder where he's, you know, is he trying to do some of the behind the scenes discrediting and finding different things to
support
his player?
Sure. Wouldn't be surprised.
He hasn't said anything.
There were, immediately following this, and this didn't, I don't think this took any research on our part. We didn't need Adam Schefter to tweet this. I think we knew that Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys were going to back Ezekiel Elliott up through the appeal. They were going to take the public stance of, we think that this is wrong and we're going to back our player. But the interesting tie into what you just said is they haven't publicly taken that stance.
Right.
Or at least the guy you would expect to do it hasn't. Jerry hasn't said anything. And I can't figure out what that means.
Yeah, I can't either.
Like, is he... Because
remember, he said he didn't see anything, didn't find anything.
He tried to sell us on Ezekiel Elliott, and we all saw through that,
right,
when he was saying, "Oh, he's not going to get suspended." We don't think he committed a crime. We don't think he did anything wrong. There's just not enough here to suspend him. We saw through that as if, okay, maybe that. Remember when we were talking about one game?
Mm-hmm.
Remember Adam Schefter? He'll probably face a minimal league suspension. Those were the words that Adam Schefter uses, and
then
we're talking about
six, right?
And then you have Chris Carter coming out. Was it Chris?
Yeah.
It was Chris Carter on Fox Sports.
There was going to be enough to make this a substantial.
It was going to be a substantial suspension, and there were going to be direct ties to the way Tom Brady was suspended,
right,
to the wording in Tom Brady's suspension.
And his accusation and where the similarities were, he was saying it was going to be something like where Brady got more in trouble for destroying
rid of
evidence.
His phone. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something similar to Ezekiel, is what Chris Carter was saying.
I don't know where this case – this, again, we got 12 days of this.
Yeah.
This is going to be really uncomfortable to talk about, uncomfortable to cover, uncomfortable to see, and it changes your perspective. Let me rephrase that. It changes my perspective on a player that I really enjoyed watching last year, because
especially if, like you said, more of this is accurate. Let's say it's accurate. Then now we went from, is he going to get a game? Maybe he doesn't get any, maybe a game, to six. Wow. League's harsh.
Mm-hmm.
Then we may be going, they're not harsh enough.
Yeah.
That's such a broad spectrum there.
And that would be, that would be a question that I had for Roger Goodell,
because
I'm sure we'll get Roger on the show. I'm sure
he'll be on 2:30.
He'd love to be on with us. That's a question I would have for him. Is these are very serious accusations. Why is it just six games?
Yeah.
Does this count as one domestic violence incident? Now, what was interesting was their wording in the latter part of the letter that they gave to Ezekiel Elliott, Jerry Jones, and all of their representatives, and that if this behavior continues, you will be you could be the recipient of a greater suspension and potential banishment from the NFL.
They felt strong enough to put that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe they feel pretty confident about what they have.
Yeah.
Which will constantly bring that question up to me. Six games, if what they have is accurate, six games isn't enough.
Right.
As much as I enjoyed them playing last year, as much as I think he's a different maker for the Dallas Cowboys, that doesn't fly, man.
Yeah.
It doesn't work.
I don't know if the way I ask is, are you okay with the NFLP? I get what they're going to do. They're going to try to help their client, anybody in the players realm, but then sometimes you just go, maybe you should just take the six.
I just want to –
Because then if you're going to go out and praise him, but condemn her more so, and what the pitfalls, like you said, that athletes have to go through. And that, again,
here was the problem, Jay, with this when it first started, is there was so much information kind of being put out there, including that she tried to get someone to lie about an incident that didn't happen. Mm-hmm. And that has been like testified and or testified isn't the word, but it's been documented by the police. It's obviously been documented by the NFL. There were a couple of incidents of that occasion where she tried to get someone to lie about something that didn't happen with Ezekiel Elliott. And so I'll go back to what I think the NFLPA is trying to do is they're trying to frame this entire thing as a setup.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm really, you know, and what I'm curious, were these two in a relationship or did they literally like know each other for like a week or 2 weeks? Like,
I don't know. I thought they were, but I don't know enough of the facts of that.
I'm completely did they just have a really awful week together? Had they been together for a while?
Yeah.
I mean, what is the background of these two?
Yeah.
Of Ezekiel Elliott and, I think her name's Tiffany Thompson.
Well, what doesn't help, too, is the Joey Bosa comments, the Urban Meyer. Not that they're accusing, but they just know.
It paints Ezekiel Elliott in a bad light.
It sure does.
And so, you know, it's one thing to see that stupid Mardi Gras video. It's another thing to hear a TMZ report about a fight at a bar. But when you start to hear the people who are closest to you behind closed doors and out of the public eye, and they're starting to say things like, yeah, you know, we had talked about this before. I think we talked about this last year that people in Columbus, people associated with the Ohio State program, they were concerned about Ezekiel mm-hmm. Elliott. There were concerns about him. He hadn't had off the field issues, so it wasn't really talked about during the NFL draft. But those who knew.
Yeah.
But there wasn't just enough to bring out there and openly discuss. Well, now there is.
Yeah, exactly.
And now it's being discussed. Dick. Yeah, it's being discussed at the. I mean, Urban Meyer,
right?
Like for Urban Meyer to come out and talk, like about
no comment or not say anything, but he chose to.
And what's that say? Because if he drops a no comment or he chose not to discuss it or chooses to go the other route and completely back Ezekiel Elliott in this conversation and in this process, and we find out this is all true, what does that do to him?
Right.
And what does that do to Ohio State? And if you're the NCAA, are you starting to look at Ohio State like, the hell went on here when this kid was here?
Yeah. What kind of program are you running, Urban?
Exactly.
And he wants that away from him for sure.
Of course he does.
Yeah.
Which shows you, at least in my mind, and we talked about this earlier as it pertains to Josh Rosen in UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear, you know, speculating, you know, coaches and scouts and all these people saying, well, Josh Rosen, he looks uncoachable. He looks to be just, you know, a total jerk. Well, that stuff normally doesn't come from the program because you want your program to look as good as possible not for Josh Rosen, but for your recruiting class.
Right.
So I just think it says something that Urban Meyer actually had to acknowledge this a little bit, like, yeah, we kept an eye on him. You know, we knew his circle wasn't everything that we were comfortable with. So we kept a close eye on him.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he goes on to discuss it further. But for a coach of a major college program to say that, it's like, oh, yeah, this was bad.
Yeah.
Because you just don't hear it that often. You protect your players. Unless you can't. Unless you absolutely 100% can't.
Yeah.
You do. And
Jerry was protecting.
Absolutely.
And then now he's not saying anything, but probably trying to protect.
I mean, think back to Johnny Manziel. Think how long Mike Sumlin.
Or Kevin Sumlin.
Kevin Sumlin. Sorry, I always think of Mike Tomlin. Kevin Sumlin championed for Johnny Manziel.
Right.
He championed for Johnny Manziel until it got to the point he couldn't. He literally couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah.
And he would say, I've tried. I think I remember the last thing I ever heard him say about Johnny Manziel was, I've tried to reach out to him and he hasn't responded.
Yeah.
I don't know what else I can do with him. Like, that's the point that you get to when you stop championing your players for these major college programs.
Yep.
And Urban Meyer hit that point, which is, if you're a Cowboy fan, that's scary because it says a lot about Ezekiel Elliott.
Sure does.
There's football tonight, and Jason Ross could not be more excited for the return of one Jay Cutler. He will start at the quarterback position for the Miami Dolphins. We'll let you know what games are tonight and what things you can look out for here on Sports 1140. So Josh Gordon's career is over? Is that what we're...
Looks like. I mean, because he just kind of fall into the Alden Smith, like, yeah, he just kind of disappear.
Yeah, but I'd like to know where he's at. Mm-hmm. I remember him working out. I remember he posted this just terribly ill-advised picture. But it was him, you know, shirtless, reminding you he is a freak of nature, saying, "Who can stop me?" And I, you know, you click on the comment section, and everyone's response was the same: "You,
yeah,
you can stop you,
Roger Goodell.
No, you can stop you because you haven't been able to, you know, stay out of trouble." But that was the last. I haven't heard from him in a long time. I haven't heard where his reinstatement. Well, obviously, until now, apparently. Yeah. That's not going to happen. I mean, do you just shelve somebody and say, okay, you're done in the league? Is that essentially what you're doing if you don't consider someone's reinstatement anymore?
Yeah, I mean.
To me, that's what it sounds like.
That's
like,
what it sounds like, too.
We're not actively considering Josh Gordon's reinstatement. Yeah. Okay.
So don't ask.
So is he ever going to get to play football again?
Permanent? It seems like it's permanent. Seems like.
He's still pretty young.
Yeah.
You see Jerry Rice out there catching passes, talking about wide receivers.
Yeah, looking pretty good, too.
Yeah, I always, you know, these receivers, because, like, Chris Carter, not so much, but when you look at T.O. still in phenomenal shape, Chad Johnson, Ocho Cinco still in phenomenal shape. Obviously, Jerry Rice is an incredible, you know, fitness guy. It's no wonder that when you're in that great a shape, you go out there, you can still run, you can still move, you think that you can, you know, Jerry, I think, said, I could still catch 80 or 90 passes. It sounds silly, but you go out there and you watch him do it, and you see the way he looks and the way he's out there running, even, you know, in a walkthrough type drill, and you go, okay, maybe if I could see it,
because
you still look incredible.
He could run some routes.
Did you see Odell Beckham Jr. catching passes a couple of days ago?
I did.
That dude is fun to watch, man.
He's amazing. His hands have got to be humongous, right? I mean, just to catch him like that one-handed, like the way it's – and it's not even like the typical – you catch the end of the football. It's a pat. Like, he's stretching out over people, ripping it away from them with one hand. It's a Nerf.
Was it Ricky Henderson that used to do that swipe catch?
Yeah.
He catches a football like that. Yeah. Like, he swipes at it and just grabs it.
Yeah.
I don't know if his hands are super big or just freakishly, freakishly strong.
Yeah.
But he is incredibly fun to watch, even if it's just during pre-games or practice or whatever. I mean, he's pretty fun to watch during games at times that Eli Manning can get him the ball.
Right.
But he's an incredible highlight.
Right? Yes, no doubt. No doubt.
He will not be playing tonight, but your boy, there's three NFL games tonight, as you heard Chris Verlade say just a moment ago there in the news update. The Dolphins and the Ravens. Two teams that were at the center of some quarterback questions here this offseason. Miami has seemed to settle theirs, and they're going with Jay Cutler as the starter, getting some reps in tonight. How excited are you to see Jay Cutler?
Not at all.
No.
Not at all. It's football.
That's good because Jay Cutler's not excited either.
I was thinking, do you give him a little more? I'm like, if they plan on him being the starter, he might get a series or two, maybe. But he's new to this. Does he play more?
Well, he's been there for virtually all of camp. Not literally all of it, but
almost.
He's been there for damn near all of it.
Not the, you know.
He played last year.
Yeah.
It's not like he's coming off a lengthy retirement. He played.
Mm-hmm. And he knows
I don't know that I'd approach it any differently than I would.
That's fine.
I mean, what's the difference? Yeah. Like, what would be the difference between him going out there and Matt Moore? I mean, I know Matt Moore played in the first preseason game, but what's the difference?
Yeah. It's weird. I love football so much. Preseason is hard for me to get fired up for. I like that it's here, and you do a little bit of evaluation, but at the end, if you see parts of a game and you look at the stats at the end, you went, who? Who are these guys? Who's playing? But that's the way preseason is, trying to keep people healthy. And that's the scary part is, and it's another week of action, and there will be some major injuries this week. Just always happens.
Yeah, well, a couple of other games. Another game to focus on. Wow, I just uttered that sentence. Tampa Bay and Jacksonville. The reason, though, is I have loved the first two episodes of Hard Knocks for completely different reasons. One, Jameis Winston obviously is the star of the show. And for a guy like me who held on to Jameis Winston's stupidity from Florida State, it's incredible to watch him interact with his team. And I think he's very, very good at it because it's putting a camera on stuff we had been hearing about all of last year. It's like, this isn't new. This isn't for the camera. We heard this. We heard he's a leader. We heard he, you know, works really, really well with his entire team. Now we're just seeing it on camera.
Yeah.
And I think that that's awesome.
Yeah, I know there was Florida State, I think, had a game last year, I want to say, or the year before. And he came back, and they had video on him in the locker room talking to the team. And I just went, wow. Wow. I see what people even said about him at Florida State. We heard the negatives.
Yeah.
But the people that said, man, this guy's he's sharp,
yep,
bright leader, amazing teammate. I thought, okay, well, some are saying that. I see the crab legs, and I see this other the stuff in the quad that's just whatever. Well, he seemingly has moved on from that and taken all the good stuff and really, really changed. And that's awesome.
Remember when what's the coach's name again? When he benched him, Jimbo Fisher. Remember when he benched him, but he came out dressed to play, like he didn't know he was benched, and Jimbo like rolled his eyes and he looked at him like, "Dude, get out of here." And he takes it. He's like, "What? What's wrong?" It's like, "Dude, you're not playing," and he sends him back to the locker room.
Yeah,
I can't remember what incident that was over. That might have been the cafeteria incident. I can't really remember, but Jimbo was critical of him when he had to be, but he always praised his leadership ability. And it was really hard getting all of those critical stories about Jameis Winston and then hearing his coach praise his leadership ability. It's like, come on, coach.
Right.
But it turns out he was actually –
seemingly.
It wasn't a spin job.
Yeah.
Like, he was telling the truth.
And this doesn't look like a guy that's doing this for cameras either.
Oh, not at all.
You know, they all know the cameras are there. But
sure, but what makes it so great is that we had heard all of this stuff already.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure had to factor in a little bit to HBO selecting Tampa Bay for Hard Knocks. I think it was a good fit. It's painted Jameis Winston really well. Following the NFL news cycle, watching how Tuesday's episode was edited was really spectacular. Have you watched?
I have not. Is it about the kicker?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I wondered about it, but
virtually,
I didn't see it.
The entire episode is about the kicker.
Yeah, Aguayo.
And it starts with him missing field goal after field goal in practice. It goes to Gerald McCoy saying, he's not going to make it. He's going wide right. Watch. He's going right, right. He's basically taunting him. They're laughing at him. And it's like watching the Zapruder film as it turns on Elm Street, because you know how it ends.
Yeah.
You know what happens when it gets to that little sign and it goes dark for a second. Yeah. You know what happens in that scene. You're watching the start of Hard Knocks like, I know how this ends.
Yeah. Not
just
good for him.
Curious how they handled it. One thing I was trying to get a perspective for is when he was being brought into the coach's office.
Uh-huh.
What was going through his mind? Like, because normally players know when they walk in, they know why they're there. I have to wonder if he knew why he was there. I was looking for like a visual response to when he got the news. I couldn't tell if he knew for sure why he was being walked to that office.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course it ends with the, I guess as close to a happy ending as it can get, in that it shows, I think it's the general manager watching the news, and he gets picked up by Chicago.
Yeah, Bears.
So it ends, you know, with that. But it's really quite an episode.
Yeah.
It's really quite an
episode.
They
do a great job with that.
They really do. And the third preseason game tonight is the Buffalo Bills and Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
A little Carson Wentz action.
Wentz, Tyrod Taylor. All right. See where that one goes.
Who are you more curious about, Tyrod Taylor or Carson Wentz?
You know, honestly, it might be Taylor.
I was thinking the same thing.
Because I think Wentz.
I think Wentz is good.
Yeah, and I think, but Tyrod Taylor's done it for a couple years.
And that's,
you know, more than Wentz has.
But we still, like, question, right?
Yeah.
Do we question because it's Buffalo? Do we question because Rex Ryan was always there and there was always questions around him?
Maybe like, the win-loss is not there. Like, if there were 10 win seasons and he's putting up the stats and you go.
So that reflects on Tyrod Taylor then?
A little bit. Yeah, because I mean, I think we would be having different conversations about him if he had made the playoffs the last 2 years. I'll go back to a guy like Matt Ryan a year ago at this time. I'm thinking, yeah, he's good.
Mm-hmm.
He's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Projected number one, I would say he's maybe come short of the expectations. He's not a bust, but he's good. He's top tier, top echelon, but nothing fantastic. Well, then he had an amazing season.
Yeah,
different feeling about him starting this year.
Yeah.
You just have to do it for long. Like, if you could do it like Philip Rivers has done the last couple of years, where you're just putting up numbers, you feel like he's the guy that's keeping them in games. They're not making the playoffs, but What if they didn't get injured? Or what if they had a few breaks and then he's a guy that's playing into the playoffs?
We didn't really say anything about Jacksonville. Do you expect them to be better? We thought they were going to be better last year.
I've been on their train like 2 years in a row, and I don't want to get burned, but I'm not happy what I hear everybody's saying about Bortles. They're just not happy about what he's doing.
Well, yeah. And
so maybe it should be Chad Henne.
That's a great
– No?
Dude. I was going to ask you how many chances does Blake Bortles get?
Yeah.
Because he's gotten a lot.
Mm-hmm. With one organization, but you mean with them, or if he gets cut or moved, or I don't know if they're going to do that. But
well, no, I mean with Jacksonville.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacksonville stinks, and we're not going to absolve them of stinking and not doing the proper things to build an organization.
But I'm interested in Fournette, though.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
And all the defense they've done the last couple of years.
Game is slow for Leonard Fournette. It's easy.
Yes, easy.
Football is easy for him.
Careful what you say there, young fella.
Yeah, we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, when you're lining up against the number ones every play.
Yeah.
Not here and there.
Watching the speed of the game is funny because you'll see the ones, they know they're playing a series, so they're going to go really hard.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see the threes and the fours because they're fighting for a job. It's those guys like – who are probably backups, but they're not fighting for their job, that are just kind of going through the motions.
Like I don't want to get hurt here.
Yeah, and that's kind of what makes watching parts of the preseason really difficult. You can watch the first quarter because you'll see the guys you know, and it'll feel like a football game, and then you could come back like late in the third, and you can try to latch on to a guy who might be, good or bad.
Yeah.
We'll come back. We'll wrap things up here on the Thursday edition of the Lowdown next. Oh, and a couple of preseason games on tonight. You know, football really kind of making its way back to being a regular part of our viewing habits. I don't know what premium channel it is, Jay Ross, but Any Given Sunday has been on a lot lately. I don't know if it's HBO or Stars or whatever, but it's been on a lot. And I've clicked over and I've picked up on various parts of it. And watching that movie that was made in 1999 is so like real and relevant today. It's borderline awkward.
Yeah.
You know, there's that scene with Al Pacino and I think it's Fred Williamson, Lawrence Taylor. They're you know, talking about his name, you know, Lawrence Taylor's name in it is Shark. And he's talking about the concussions that he's had. And if he gets one more concussion, he could die. And the other doctor has switched his MRI stuff, and you know, all of this talk. And you go to the scene where Cap Rooney is talking to his wife, or he's talking to Al Pacino, and then I think he talks to his wife after that, and he's talking about having blank spots in his memory.
Yeah,
and you're watching all of this like, oh my gosh, and you think that again, this Any Given Sunday was made in 1999.
So almost 20 years old.
Yeah. And we've kind of convinced ourselves that this concussion thing and CTE and all of this stuff is new. It's not new. This was 20 years ago, and it was being written into a movie.
Yeah.
A movie in which a lot of NFL players, I mean, a movie in which a lot of people who have seen it go, yeah, that's probably the most realistic depiction of what the NFL is. That's uncomfortable to me. It's just like as I'm watching it, I'm almost like cringing like, oh, my gosh, this is really, really relevant today.
They have it right, and it's holding up, and it's probably too real now.
Well, it's too real in the sense of they want it like it's like, well, we didn't know. We're just now learning. We're still trying to figure it out. Meanwhile, this Hollywood movie has a quarterback walking around talking about blank spots in his memory, and the linebacker talking about, you know, risking
I could die if I
life
play
and
some
death
more. Right.
On his next hit.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, ouch. This is so.
And then, of course, when we have Bill Bellamy and Reese, it just all kind of ties in.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah.
I think that's a great reason to bring the Bill Bellamy interview up again if you have not heard the Bill Bellamy interview. We had a great interview. Doug and I had Kenny Anderson on Friday.
Uh-huh.
If you've never interviewed Kenny Anderson, it is awesome. I told Chris to lock that down and steal it, and we'll use it for a show later, you know, best of show later. But it was, I think over the course of the last 3 weeks, three-ish weeks, we've had three of my favorite interviews that we've ever been a part of.
Mm-hmm.
That Kenny Anderson one, TJ Carey
at
Raiders camp, and then, of course, Bill Bellamy.
Yeah.
Which I think was the greatest storytelling in the history of radio.
Yeah, and the fact that it kept going when we were off the air.
I would have.
It's like we had to go back on, otherwise he could still be talking.
I would have. I wish we had that moment in the hallway on social media so people could have heard the stories that he kept telling when we went off. I wish we could have hey guys, we're just gonna screw commercials for this entire hour.
Just he's on the show, just the whole day.
Get a sponsor to sponsor the entire commercial rep because we can't go to commercial right now. And it was so funny. Chris says, hey, we got to get out. And I asked him the Any Given Sunday question, and he went a solid 8 or 9 more minutes.
Because you can't stop that story. He put all the layers and the color inside of it, mm-hmm. so you needed to experience all of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm still so regretful I didn't ask him what his line was from that movie. That
so
he
we would know
to.
And –
we'd have it.
The world would know.
We'd be the first to ever have it.
Yeah.
We completely missed it. I completely missed it. Shameful. Shameful, shameful. Mm. We joked about Marshawn Lynch talking to the press earlier, or not talking to the press. He actually did. We had that sound came in. He was asked, as you know, Marshawn did not stand for the national anthem in the Raiders preseason game. He was asked if he thinks fans are going to stand for the national anthem. That was his actual response to the question. He was also asked about Jack Del Rio, if he just lets players be themselves. Again, that wasn't a miscue. That was his actual answer to the question. He did mention one more thing. I love Marshawn Lynch, man. Mm. I absolutely do. Mike, what's happening, buddy?
Hey, I just heard you guys talking about Any Given Sunday, and I just wanted to bring you guys' attention to another show called Playmakers.
Mm-hmm.
It was on ESPN a couple years ago, and the NFL actually had the show removed because it was a bad depiction on the NFL. It had Omar Gooding,
I remember.
Hornsberry.
Yeah.
If you guys really want to get a good insight on what the NFL is really, really like, watch that show, Playmakers. Thanks, guys.
Hey, we appreciate you, Mike. Yeah, we remember that show well. It comes up in conversation with us because we always ask the question, what does the NFL know about ballers? Do they have to approve? Because ballers, to me, is just nuts.
Mm-hmm.
The way they intertwine reality with
the storyline now
fiction.
Is too real.
Well, there's not just that. There's obviously there's the Raiders moving to Las Vegas storyline, but they intertwine real life players with the fictitious players.
Right.
You hear the phrase, well, they blur the line. There's no line on ballers. It's just all mixed together.
Yeah. Just goes.
I vaguely remember Playmakers. I do remember it. And
I remember watching. But I can't tell you a storyline or a theme.
Right.
Or I don't remember any significant moments.
And I do remember the controversy when it got taken off.
Yeah, I can't remember how many – did it go a season or was it a few weeks or was it – I feel like it was short.
One season.
One season.
A season. Okay.
One season. So, did we miss anything today? It's good to be back.
Yeah. I think we got it covered.
Yeah, just gonna run down Buffalo, Philly. You wanna pick games?
Oh yeah, this is huge. Let's do it.
Yeah. Okay, here.
Keep a running tally.
Here. I'll do you one better. I'll make this substantially harder. You're gonna throw something at me with this question. Buffalo, Philly, Miami, Baltimore, Tampa Bay, Jacksonville. So let's take Tampa Bay out of the equation. Buffalo, Philly. Let's take Miami also. Buffalo, Philly, Baltimore, Jacksonville. Their starting quarterback gets hurt. What happens tomorrow?
Buffalo, Philly, Baltimore.
Is it Chase Daniel behind Carson Wentz still?
I believe so.
I don't know who's behind Tyrod Taylor anymore because it was EJ who's here.
I don't know the answer to that one.
And then Baltimore, we know what a
– Yeah.
We know what's going on in Baltimore. So, what do we
Tony
do?
Tony Romo.
You should be ashamed of yourself. Did you wrap us up? I feel like I vaguely heard you wrap us up. That's a good point to end on. Don't you do that
to
Tony Romo. It's as good a point of any. We thank you so much for being with us again. We are very, very happy to be back here with you. And you want to do it again tomorrow?
Let's do it.
Cool. Thank you to Chris Verlotte, our producer, Jason Ross. I'm Damian Barling. We'll see you tomorrow at noon.